What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Green Malkin Lane Patreon channel. I am so excited to be recording with a friend that I have had online forever, but we're finally meeting face-to-face over Zoom. The incredible Ash Elaine is here. Ash, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. I'm so
happy to see you, my friend.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you too. It's lovely to meet you too. How have you been?
Life in America 2025 is chaos. I think it is very similar in London, except without the Trump of it all. How are you doing?
How am I doing? Medium. Solid medium.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. Would you like to tell listeners a little bit about yourself? People may know you. You've been in the kind of the podcasting world for quite some time, and you're delightful to listen to. It's great to meet you face to face.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Ashley. I have been in the podcasting world a little bit. I have a show called X of Words, which is about Black queer perspectives on the X-Men. And it's been going for about 4 years. I'm coming back from a little bit of a hiatus now because, yeah, it was based on X-Books. And I wanted to give this new era time to flourish before I open my mouth about it. And now it has flourished and I will be opening my mouth about it. So... But yeah, it's lovely to meet you. Thanks for inviting me here on Grey Malkin. It's a pleasure.
Opinions on this new era of books seem to be kind of not great from a lot of listeners. I'm a person who, if I'm going to read something and spend time on it, I'm going to find something to love about it. I don't want to waste my time otherwise. All right. But how are you enjoying this new era of books?
Yes.
What I'm finding is people have a few things they like. There's like a few books that kind of stand out, but line wide, most of queer listeners, at least who are kind of who I mostly associate with, seem to be really struggling to find their feet. There's a couple of books that they like, some that get like decent reviews from folks, but there's kind of not that one or two books that everybody's really excited about. Opinions seem pretty polarized these days.
There's nothing really that's grabbing me. It feels like the foundation's gone. You know, there was a solid foundation. Whatever you think of the previous era, because, you know, at some point you'd really have to let shit go. But the previous era had a solid foundation. The concept was strong. And I feel like this is a bunch of books that are interesting in an almost superficial way, but have lost any real grounding of like what the message or the story is. So I mean, I respect your approach to it when you were like, if I'm going to read something, I'll find something to love about it. And that sounded a little bit to me like you're going to convince yourself to like it if you read it. And I tried that. I tried to be so positive. I went in with my heart wide open and I said, well, friends, that was issue one and that was issue two and that was issue three.
I'm in an interesting place. So I used to write for the Marvel Handbook. So for years and years, I've been reading all the books, right? And I always want to find something I love. But yeah, I'll fully admit, and I've said it on the show, I won't give like a harsh negative criticism to something, but I will say if it's not my favorite, you know. I think that this era of books oddly reflects what a lot of queer people are feeling. We move from Krakoa to like this fractured society of mutants, and we're like living in these kind of fascist times where we're all feeling very fractured. It's oddly representative. But you know, all that said, I also am in a weird spot because I've become personal friends with a lot of the creators, and I know how much work and love they're putting in, but I also know how much oversight is in place, and there's a lot of barriers right now. Now, the interesting thing, and this is kind of a cool lead-in for our conversation today. One of the books coming out right now is Ashley Allen, not Ashley Elaine, but Ashley Allen's Magic book. I've met Ashley. Ashley's lovely, and Magic, I think, when you are putting her forward as the primary character, there's a certain type of story that you tell with her. And if you're reading the current Magic book with the stuff going on with the Society of Witches and the Moonstar and then this character Liminal, this is an oddly parallel story to the character we're going to talk about today, who is Sapna. Ash, what's your relationship with the character Magic?
I like Magic. I've always liked Magic. I thought she was. I think she's one of the characters that is maybe a little bit more interesting than should be on a team. There are some people whose stories I think are so rich that being in an ensemble book always hampers them a little bit, and she's one of them. I love the Magic book actually. If one, there are a couple of books: Storm, Magic, and the first half of Exceptional have been the standouts and the things that I'm reading and liking.
I like all of those. I'm really liking Jed's book as well. The Adjectiveless X-Men one is one I've latched onto because I love deep continuity. I love when it pulls me all over the place. And again, I'll find something to love about them all, but Storm is my favorite, if I'm honest. Murray has become a very dear friend of mine. I think he's incredible.
See, I think that we sit in interesting positions then as podcasters, because sometimes I think that compromises, not compromises, but it richens your idea of the creative process in a way that you almost can't see it entirely as a reader anymore. Because you know how everything is made and you understand that sometimes these are not the singular expression of a vision that people on, people reading might assume. They go, oh, well, every word and every decision, every character here is just a pure expression of what the writer wanted. And that isn't always the case. There's
Right.
loads and loads of shit and transformations and negotiations and
In
mandates
fact, I
and
might
things.
argue that it's rarely the case.
Exactly. And we know that. We know that. And I try to, like, when I read the books, shift myself into like a reader's thing. I'm like, great. I see, but like, as a reader, what is this? Because I think particularly through the lens that I've looked at comics through because of X of Words, which is like a specifically black and queer lens. Oftentimes that has been used as the reason for why anti-blackness or misogynoir can make it into the books, and people like pass the buck around. Do you know what I mean? And so I kind of try to have a dual sense of like, yes, I do understand the complications and all the negotiations, and sometimes people are really going to bat for things in books that don't happen or can't happen, and there's a million stories, and then I kind of have to jump out of that into left and go, right, okay, but what are we left with?
Right.
What are we reading?
And at the end of the day, I want to enjoy my book. I want to be
Exactly.
excited to pick it up, right? And
You
I have been vocal about this. Like, there's always the book or two that I'm like so excited to go get at the store and like pick it up,
know?
right? And that's been like Fantastic Four and like Avengers Academy lately. It hasn't been
Really?
X-Men books. Yeah. So like I mean,
Strange Academy had me run into the shop.
you Strange Academy was excellent. I love a really fun, diverse cast. I think what I find is I still kind of look for the same thing in my 40s that I looked for in my teens when I was picking up the books. I want epic adventure and messy soap opera, and I want, like a really solidly incredible story that makes me want to pick it up. But I've always been that guy that really wants the deep continuity. I want the obscure characters. I want everything I've ever read to matter. So I love a book that makes me use those parts of my brain always.
That's really nice.
So we're going to talk about Sapna today. Let me do a little bit of a build-in for listeners. Some of my listeners, Ash, are not long-term X-Men. So my show started in the Silver Age. My show's currently set in about 1975, and some of my listeners are there with me. They've never read a book past 1975. Now, in Giant Size X-Men number one, we meet Ileana Rasputina, as it's later corrected, for the first time. She's a young child. We have a story later, infamously, where she gets kidnapped by an evil kind of wizard slash child trafficker named Velasco in a demon dimension. And he draws on her soul to create magic. It's the old witch using the innocence of the child to propagate their power, right? In fact, I just saw the movie Weapons, which is the witch drawing on children, kind of energy again. It's incredible. The methodology though for magic is that she escapes limbo, this dimension, by becoming its ruler, in essence. And there's a dark side and a light side, and the way that these two parts of her interact, it's kind of like innocence corrupted. But also, if she releases the dark child, is that really the part of her that's her truth? So there's a lot of really interesting things related to this character. We're seeing her in modern comics primarily as like a very self-focused character. She has a lot of fun. She's got a big old sword. She has teleporting discs. She's been a leader on the team. She's a war general, and she's now on the main X-Men book as a lead character. If we jump back to 2016, which is where we're going to be spending our conversation today, this is an era of the books similar to now, I think, where a lot of readers kind of struggled to find their footing. They were looking for things to love. And we're going to be starting in a book called Extraordinary X-Men by Jeff Lemire and Humberto Ramos, where we have kind of an odd premise for the team. We're going to keep our stories focused on magic specifically. Not all of Extraordinary X-Men is great. There's some characters that it does a major disservice to, Nightcrawler being right at the top of the list. But the magic story in this book is pretty solid. Let me hear your connection to this era of books in 2016, Ash.
This was the era and the very long stretch of X-Men where I really was kind of disillusioned with what the book stood for, because ultimately it felt like era after era after era, they were just finding more layered, complicated ways to suffer this small population. Do you know what I mean? And so this was around the time when the Terrigen Mists were out. So if anybody is familiar with the Inhumans, who are kind of a parallel type of quote unquote super group within the Marvel Universe, who kind of it's kind of similar, except they get their powers through this Terrigen Mist, which is some explosion of a weird
And
crystal.
they're very like Game of Thrones, War of the Roses, inbred, like royal family. Like there's, I love the Inhumans, but there's a lot of crazy.
Exactly, it's like X-Men and Dynasty. What if? But no, like X-Men and the Crown. But okay, so then they kind of pit them together, and for some reason, then well, not for some reason. There's a big cloud walking around, and the Terrigen Mist that makes Inhumans kills mutants, and there's this huge sort of zero-sum game thing happening, and then mutants end up in limbo, living in hell.
The X-Men build a base in this kind of demon purgatory dimension because this cloud of Terrigen Mists that's moving around the Earth with the winds, if it hits mutants, it will give them something called Mpox, which is incurable. And some major characters die of Mpox, including Multiple Man and Cyclops. Of course, they're both back, but it was pushed pretty strongly in the book at the time. And some of the characters that we really love these days got their origins here because Marvel was really pushing to make the Inhumans a thing. So the Inhumanity books came out, and Moon Girl and Ms. Marvel both are books that have become beloved. These are characters that people love from this era that are directly related, both being Inhuman characters. So what made you choose Sapna as the character you wanted to discuss today?
Absolute unsung potential. I think it was a great character that was kicked off in an era where even A-list X-Men were being shunted to the side, and it was a decimation era. And we know that young X-Men don't make it out, even in flourishing eras. Sometimes they don't make it out. There's a glass ceiling of all the other X-Men on top of them. And so I felt like Sapna was an incredible character that was spawned at exactly the wrong time. And I think her trajectory and the things that she ends up doing, being, and representing in this story are kind of symbolic or representative of that.
So let's take an innocent child who has unlimited potential, and because of this world that doesn't accept her, or because of evil forces, we toss some demons into the mix, right? And then we watch what happens. This is a trope in horror films. We love a story about like an innocent child who then becomes the receptacle of some sort of demon or Satan or some evil force, like it's the little girl in the pigtails who is suddenly very scary as her head twists around, or it's the two little twin girls in the Shining standing in the hallway, and you're like, no, we love that
That's
energy,
true.
and
That's
Sapna
true.
very much represents that in a way that Ilyana does too. But in this role, Ilyana is the character coming to Sapna's rescue, where for Ilyana, she was never really rescued, right? Like she had to grow up in her own pain. And this is a story where she gets to come to the rescue, much like the modern book with this character. Oh, I forgot the kid's name that has liminal living inside of him, but she's trying to come to the rescue for this new kid in Ashley's book. So it's a great way to tell an Ilyana story.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because, when you were talking about Ilyana's origins, she subverted things in some very interesting ways. Because one, she was, now tell me if the timing's right on this, but she was like a sympathetic Russian character. And I know like the X-Men, the sort of second generation of X-Men, the sort of Storms, the Nightcrawlers, the Colossus, the Wolverines, they were meant to be a little bit more global, you know? So you had different nationalities in the team. It was meant to be a bit, not so much like five white kids from upstate.
But
It
focusing that specifically on Colossus in 1975, Colossus was the Russian defector. He's the one that got
Exactly.
out, right? And Ilyana is a different version of that. Ilyana is more about innocence corrupted. By the way, I did a big show about Colossus last July. If you take Mikhail, Colossus, and Ilyana as the three Rasputin kids who all have potential, we get these odd kind of Russian tropes in fiction. We have the cosmonaut, the farmer, and
Yeah.
the witch, right?
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
It is. And then she gets the sort of little white girl in danger, which is often deployed as a way to ham up a villain as worse. So the worst thing that a lot of villains can do is threaten or menace white women and girls. And so you have her being whisked away into a limbo dimension, taken by a very camp looking man who's always wearing a cape and saying dramatic things. But then she saved herself. You know, there was this big effort and these big things, but largely she kind of gets it out of the mud with grit and tricks and her own ingenuity. And I was so excited to watch what would happen when magic met another her. But unfortunately, I think all of the tropes that magic was spared, Sapna was not in that story because magic does come in and save her, but in a way that doesn't really save her.
This is
So,
also an interesting time for magic as well. So, magic was in the New Mutants for so long. We have the joyful
yeah.
character balanced by the dark child, but then she gets reverted to childhood and killed by the legacy virus. So
Yeah.
it's only been, 7 or 8 years since she's been revived originally as the dark child. And there's a lot of really dark stories with her, with like Kieran Gillen and others. There's the no snowflakes in hell kind of stuff. So
Yeah.
this is her kind of launching into a new like hero era. Let's put her on the forefront. It's reminiscent of that time, like Cannonball joined the X-Men, right? Like this is a
Yeah.
huge upgrade for a character on the main team. So the other thing we have to layer here really quickly, this is a very complicated time because this is still the era of like the Brian Michael Bendis bringing the original X-Men to the present. And there's a lot of timey-wimey time travel nonsense here before it wraps up in Extermination. So the original five X-Men are around. Professor X is dead because this is after the Phoenix Five story, which Magic was also part of, right? She got amplified to God levels for a while. The Terra, and this is also like coming out of like when Colossus became Juggernaut. Like there's a lot of crazy shit. So the Terrigen Mists are in the air and they are living in limbo, and Storm is leading the team. So the entire like mansion is in limbo in a demon dimension being protected by shields. So Magic sets up the very first mission for the team. They go to New Delhi and they're trying to protect a vulnerable mutant girl who's been targeted by the military there. New Delhi, by the way, for American listeners at least, who have very little sense of world politics and population, New Delhi has 33 million people living in it, which it like compare that to New York, it's insane. Anyway, Magic is trying to protect this child, and her name is Sapna, Sapna. And her parents are quite frightened and very mutant phobic. And they're like, Magic, please don't hurt our daughter. And Magic says, I'm not here to hurt her or you. I'm here to take you somewhere safe. My name's Ilyana. What's yours? Sapna? You do not need to be afraid anymore, Sapna. I will help you. Do you trust me? Will you come with me? Yes. And she's just the tiniest little thing with like the biggest eyes. She's like the cutest little girl. And she reaches for Magic's hand, and the civilians open fire, and Magic is hit. And she opens a portal back to X Haven, which is what they're calling the refuge in Limbo, because it's not safe for mutants on Earth, right? So when they arrive, Magic tells the others that Sapna has been hit by the Terrigen Mists, and she now needs medical attention. So innocent girl, power is not really even activated yet, but she's already been targeted by the military and already has a disease, which Magic has been targeted by the military and already has been killed by the legacy virus. Magic says it's bad out there, Storm, and getting worse. It wasn't just a mob this time. The Indian military were after her. They've started outlawing mutants. These people, they used to fear and hate us, but now after what Scott did, they just hate us. They showed no hesitation in opening fire on me. So Sapna and her parents all come to X Haven. We see them living there for a period of time. And then we jump to issue three, where there's a horde of demons, because Limbo's hell again, that break through the barrier. And Sapna is desperate to protect her parents. An electrical energy burst bursts forth from her hand. So her powers activate in this moment of trauma. And she tries to get the demons to stop, and they do. Sapna glows with power, and she's now in command of a force of demons. Okay, if you're really listening, help the X-Men. The fight with the demons ends in issue number four. So,
I think it's pretty classic. It's pretty classic X fare. I mean, beleaguered. She's fucking going through it, you know? She's having a shit day. No X-Men comic wants anybody under the age of 15 to be having a good day. So she's in the shit, basically. And she goes from one shit to another shit. So she's stressed out, and then they pick her up and her parents up, and then they turn up in a place that's ostensibly a bit worse. It's like, the military, and you've rescued me to hell instead. But you needed to give her the trauma event, and that was it. And I think saving her parents was an interesting one. Saving our parents was a really, really interesting one. So I
Well,
liked it.
and if we do the comparison with Ilyana, Ilyana's parents were gunned down by military. In by the way, in that storyline by Nicieza with the Soul Skinner, like Ilyana's a little kid, so the Russian military storms the house because they want to kidnap Ilyana and advance her back to adulthood, so they have her powers as a weapon, and her parents are killed by the military. So Ilyana's watching this happen to another little girl, right?
And she too, well, we'll not get ahead of ourselves, but that I think that was a really interesting like manifestation moment. And sometimes, it's stress and mortal danger, but I think the fact that Sapna's first instinct was to protect people was something that I thought was quite interesting. As we go on and we talk, I think Sapna got like new big hitter coding for me. There was a lot of things that coded Sapna as like, this is going to be a big deal. And I think that's part of the reason why I really paid attention, because I think typically this the story, and tell me what you think about this, whether you think that you agree with this or not. Typically, mutants manifest in a way that is personal, deeply personal, or sometimes against their parents, or something completely innocuous, like, oh, it happened at school because I was being bullied, or I was being chased down by this person and this person. And a mutant who manifests trying to protect somebody else isn't as common, and I think that's why I perked up. Maybe it's just because I'm a sucker for like a kid in danger story. I don't know.
You and I, being different colors and being in different countries, the thing we have in common is we're both gay men, right? And I think we can easily make this allegory about trans kids as well. But I was being bullied at school long before I knew I was gay, and that's the sad part of that story. I'm a sociologist in my day job, so that's the sad part of that story is kids aren't allowed to have their powers develop. They're being targeted for being mutant first, and we like expect it to be a trauma that awakens their powers. Another interesting parallel with magic. Magic's power is these teleporting discs. But because she gets kidnapped that one time, she becomes inherently connected to Limbo specifically, and then the soul magic that resides in her sword. Sapna's power is language. Sapna's power is like cipher, like Doug Ramsey. She's a what they call, I think, omnilingual. She can like read and interpret any language. And because she ends up in Limbo, she has to go there to be protected. She ends up absorbing the language of these demons and like the magic understanding, which is much too much for a little kid to understand. So now she's commanding demons and casting spells and like using necromancy in a little while and conjuring portals because she's able to tap into the language of this realm, and the power corrupts her because she wasn't safe. But you wonder how much the Mpox plays into that as well. But significant trauma for this kid already, which is heartbreaking.
But makes her almost a mirror image of magic, because now you have a little girl who is inextricably linked to Limbo and knows far too much and has been, it stared back into her as well. And in the same way that magic kind of came out with this dark child thing, so too Sapna now has a shadow side to contend with.
And you know she's evil because she has bags under her eyes.
Magic really fucks up your skincare. Like, whatever you had going on, don't learn any type of spells.
So if we jump to issue 6 here, if I read Sapna, will you read Magic? We'll do this kind of interchange in a moment. We do not have to look like accents. We'll just use our voices. It's fine. So then in issue 6 is where Magic sees Sapna, who has now like tapped into these demons because she was left to protect herself. She's wearing like a baggy X-Men sweater. She's like very emaciated and kind of withered. And like there's this red demon that's bigger than her that's kind of cowering at her feet. And Magic's worried, and she says,
Sapna, are you okay? Why are you out here all alone?
"Oh, hello, Magic. It's my mother and father. After the demons attacked and my powers came out, they could barely look at me. I think they were scared of me. My father wouldn't even let my mother talk to me. Then they left. They left me here all alone."
Yes, I heard. I'm so sorry. I know it's hard, but you're not alone.
"But what if they're right? What if I'm evil?"
You are not evil, Sapna. You are a mutant. And never let anybody tell you those are the same things.
Then why can't I help but feel that my mother and father are right, that there's something wrong with me?
There's nothing wrong with you. In fact, from what I hear, you saved the day when the mystical, when my mystical defenses around X Haven went down. You're a hero, Sapna. Your parents may not understand that now, but one day they'll see that you're special, gifted, not damned. And I see you've made a friend. Have you given him a name?
Boogers, he's snotty.
I like it. And he just listens to you?
Yes, they all do whatever I say. The monsters out there. I like boogers best, though. I think she likes to eat them. She's that
Do you want to go out there? See Limbo firsthand?
okay.
Are you scared?
No, maybe I should be, but I kind of feel really good out here. So you're the master of this realm, Ileana?
Yes, as long as I possess the soul sword, I rule Limbo.
But not the other ones?
Other ones? What do you mean?
The other realms, all the ones alongside this one. Who rules those?
Other realms? I don't understand, Sapna.
But don't you see the doors? And suddenly the sky just fills up with realms. It's giving very like Monsters, Inc. with all the doorways that open to other places.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's another reason why I thought she was coded as a big hitter, because not everybody gets a fucking animal companion. Like to come out of the gate with a familiar.
And Boogers exists at the same time as Pickles the Bamf is a main member of the other team. So she says, don't you see the doors?
Oh my God, I do now.
So they look at a portal and Magic asks,
What's on the other side, Sadna?
lots of stuff, almost too much to even imagine. I can see it in my head when I close my eyes, like a tree branching off in millions of directions, each branch another realm. Some of them are good, but some of them are bad, real bad.
I think we need to go and see Doctor Strange.
And I'm reading this girl as a little bit menacing because, like, the demon magic is like slowly influencing her. If you're watching this in a movie, she's not moving quite right? Like, there's something a little off here.
No, I reject that framing. I reject that framing. That's
Think her
exactly why
innocence is
Sapna got
proven.
what she got. That is a small girl. She
No,
was an innocent.
Sapna's not evil, but Limbo's evil, right? Like,
She
that's
was
the
an
difference.
innocent. She didn't deserve none of this.
No,
She
agreed.
could see the doors.
She definitely did not deserve it, but that's what Limbo does to kids, right? So
Oh,
she needs an exorcism now.
poor baby. Poor
So
baby.
in issue 7, there's a witch in Weird World. We're not going to take time. Weird World's like a little magic, crazy crossroads place at Marvel. There's a witch in Weird World that warns Magic about a problem coming up and predicts even Sapna won't be able to save you. And then in issue 8, Sapna goes with Magic to Manhattan.
Okay, we're here, Sapna.
Wow, I've never seen New York before. Well, I mean, I've seen it on the internet and stuff, but not in real life. With magic, all these people, won't they?
Don't worry, girl. I've cast a cloaking spell. I'm not in the habit of hiding, but given that last time you were in a large crowd, it was a mob trying to kill you, because she really has to ham the trauma just in case.
But also
So
inform the readers.
yeah. The last time you were in a large crowd, it was a mob trying to kill you. I thought it best to ease you back into the world.
And this doctor you're taking me to, is he going to help me with my mpox?
No, full stop. That seems to be clearing up on its own quite nicely. I can't figure that out myself. Some mutants die instantly when hit with the Terrigen Mist. Others get what looks like a mild cold, but then medicine was always beyond me. No, let's leave science to Henry McCoy and his
Nope,
kind.
don't do that. Don't leave it to Henry McCoy.
We're here to see a different kind of doctor. I mean, this is wild to say to a child. This is a wild thing to say to a child. They were like, "So you told me I was sick," and she was like, "Yeah, no, don't worry about that." Me not being an expert in any type of medicine, I've decided that you're okay. Usually people die though.
Fine. I'm looking at you
You
and
seem
you
fine. Yeah, apart from the big bags around your eyes and the fact that everybody seems to be terrified of you and worried for you, you're fine.
seem
So yeah, she goes, no, let's leave science to Henry McCoy and his kind. We're here to see a different kind of doctor, Sapna. And if you think New York is overwhelming, well, you haven't seen anything yet. Doctor Strange, I hope you came at a good time. You did remember our appointment.
And Doctor Strange is looking rough, y'all. Oh, yes, I was just settling a little quarrel in the underdimensions between a group of spectral cannibals and the Kirashu tribes. Nasty business, but all settled now. Please, please come in. And this must be the gifted young girl we spoke about. Sapna, is it?
Don't be rude. Say hello to Doctor Strange, Sapna. It's really dawning on me that magic's a bit of a prick.
She doesn't know how to be with children, I imagine, very well. She says, "Hello. I've been anxious to meet you, Sapna. Ilyana's told me some wonderful things about you. I know I look like a bit of a mess at the moment, but I promise I'm one of the good guys."
Oh, God, Jesus Christ.
This child's like seven, you guys.
And also, right, so you've taken this poor, lonely, isolated brown girl, and all the white adults are going, I'm one of the good ones. As you can tell, they were signaling what was happening. But Doctor Strange, yes, does say he's one of the good ones.
And she says,
Then,
it's nice to meet you too. And Magic says,
Stefan, before we begin, I have to thank you again for your help.
now Magic and Doctor Strange have a relationship. She has trained under him as an apprentice to a certain degree, although it's not been played up a lot in comics. So Doctor Strange says, "Of course, Ilyana, it's nothing. I'm as fascinated as you are with Sapna's quick mystical development."
No, not this. I mean, for all you and the others did when you helped move the Jean Grey School to Limbo.
So we get a flashback to Magic, Doctor Strange, Shaman, Scarlet Witch, Doctor Voodoo, and then we move back to the present. Magic says,
Without you, X-Haven wouldn't exist.
"The conflict between mutants and inhumans is a complicated affair for sure, but saving lives transcends politics. I'd do it again without a second thought, Ilyana. Let's just hope that we can all help you come home soon, yes? Now then, Sapna, I'm dying to get a better look at what makes you tick. I think it's best if we do this in the anteroom. Please enter if you dare. Kidding, it's actually quite a comfy little room. And I made tea, Sapna. There have been mutants in the past whose abilities are directly connected to magic, but I'm sensing there's more to you than that. Do you mind if I cast a cursory detection spell? I promise it won't hurt a bit." She says, "Okay. Excellent. Now just hold still a moment. Ah, interesting. Ilyana, do you see it? The shape of her power."
Yes, it looks like different phonetic characters, alphabets. Some I recognize, others.
"Yes, it seems her mutation isn't magical at all, but linguistic in nature. The ability to absorb, translate, and fully understand the languages of anything and anyone around her." "Language? I don't get it."
Well, at their essence, all magic and all spells are just a language, Sapna. And your power manifested while you were in limbo, so.
"So you absorbed all the magical knowledge around you, which, in a mystical dimension like Limbo's case, is extremely vast. So, like, if my power manifested while I was in math class, I would have gotten really smart at math instead of magic?" "Yes, I suppose so. Which, maybe don't take the child to the demon dimension. I don't know, that's all I'm saying. And in the future, you may indeed be able to absorb and decipher many more such languages, but I think your mind and body are still processing all the magical information you took in during that initial burst. So for now, at least, you are at your saturation point. And there was something else, too. Did you sense it, Ilyana?
No, what was it?
Something just below the surface of her consciousness, unrelated to her power, but, well, frankly, it's impossible to explain. It was very foreign, like trying not to describe a color that's not yet been invented. With your permission, I'd like to take another look, a little trip inside your mind. Will you come with us, Magic?
Of course, I won't leave your side, I promise.
Hold on, this may be a bit jarring. So this is a very Professor X astral projection style. They go into Sapna's mind, where they get attacked by a scary tentacle monster, and it nearly overwhelms both the magicians before Sapna seizes her power, speaks a mystic word, and destroys the monsters in her brain. They all land back on Earth, and Magic says,
Sapna, are you all right?
"Yes, I think so.
Stefan, what was that?
I have no idea, but it's gone."
Gone? What do you mean?
"I mean, just gone. No trace to anywhere near Sapna. Magic, I want to go home.
It's okay, Sapna, I'm here.
What if it comes back?"
Don't worry, I won't let that thing hurt you, I promise.
"Hurt her? Ilyana, I don't think you understand. That thing wasn't coming for Sapna. It was coming for you." Dun dun dun! Okay, we have a lot to unpack here, Ash.
We do. We do. There's a lot going on.
What are your thoughts on
It's
the
a lot.
Doctor Strange adventure?
It's a lot going on, honey. So everybody's bedside manner is terrible. Everybody's bedside manner is terrible. I mean, okay, so remember in Civil War II, there was that Inhuman who could predict the future, and they thought predict the future to 100% accuracy. And largely, people talked about him more than they talked to him. And here, I feel like because it's like magic and Doctor Strange, who they love to have talk about magical stuff, there's a lot of like diagnosing and not a lot of so what? What do we do? It's just a lot of exposition of like, ah, look, linguistics. But again, I think the side thing of that, so everybody talks around Sapna a bit in this, but she's still doing cool things. And so I was like, ah, okay. But again, this is what teed her up in my mind as like, this is going to be an important character. Because at this point, you've got like cool manifestation, you've got an animal sidekick, you've got the my powers aren't what we thought they were at the first. Yeah. And all of these are like hallmarks of you're going to be hearing about this character for quite a long time. Sapna is, for, given how many issues she's actually involved in, an extremely interesting, layered,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
rich.
And she has 12 appearances. You got to consider too, like, the X-Men are in over their heads, the world
Yeah.
politics, everything going on. Sapna's lucky she got rescued because I'm guessing there's a couple thousand other little mutant kids who did not get rescued. The mutant gene has just become activated again, and now there's
Yeah.
fucking Mpox, right? Like, so she's saved, but now she's got to save herself. Like, what other choice does she have? I do like that magic went to Doctor Strange instead of the Beast, though. That was a
Oh,
good
yeah,
choice. Because
definitely.
Beast was recently responsible for bringing the original X-Men to the present. And this is where like the Watcher shows up at his house and is like, fuck you, Henry McCoy. Do you remember that?
That was quite funny. And you know that thing when they say that people meet their destiny on the path they took to avoid it? I feel like since then he got worse. So I would like us to revisit that moment personally for Beast at some point.
Stay tuned in my show. We're doing a huge academic panel in December on The Watcher. So we will for sure talk about that specific scene in some detail because I love it. It's one of my favorite moments in comics of all time. In issue 10, Sapna's learning how to make golems out of rocks, and magic is fighting them, and Boogers is there. And magic theorizes that with Sapna's growing power, she might even be able to resurrect the dead. And she's planning to investigate the portals that Sapna pointed out soon. And then Sapna gets an old like blue and yellow X-Men uniform and she's like, oh, and it's a cute little training suit, right?
You got a fucking, she's got your fucking uniform, man. They should have
Yay,
tapped her
child
in.
soldiers.
She should have tapped her in. They should have tapped her in. This was just, they were teeing her up. They kept, like, the crescendos were building. I saw the vision. I really did see the vision.
And there's a lot of other stories going on, but Sapna's is fun and it's very consistent. Jeff Lemire's a good storyteller when you give him room, for sure.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Prenuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
In issue 11, Sapna sneaks out of X-Haven with Boogers and she leaves a letter behind. Dear Ilyana, please don't be mad at me, but I think I need to leave X-Haven. You've been so nice to me. You're like the big sister I never had. You're so pretty and cool, and you've taught me so much, and I'm just a total coward. It's only now that you've gone off to save the X-Men that I have the courage to tell you the truth about me. There's some things that I've kept to myself because I was scared and that you wouldn't want me around anymore. My mother and father left me when my powers started because they thought I was evil. You told me that wasn't true, but I didn't tell you everything. I am evil. Ever since my powers started, I've been having dreams. No, not dreams, they're nightmares. And we get an image of Sapna using the soul sword to kill magic, which is a nightmare she's clearly been having. But now they're getting more and more real, and I'm scared they aren't nightmares at all, but visions of what will happen if I stay here. But lately, there's been something else too, a voice. It's calling to me. It's telling me that it can help me, that it can take the bad stuff away and make me good again. I don't know whose voice it is, but I do know where it is coming from. So I'm sorry, Ilyana. You mean so much to me. I couldn't live with myself if I ever hurt you. So I'm going away now, and I'm not coming back unless I'm cured. And then she enters a portal. And this is heartbreaking. Again, the queer analogy here of like queer and trans kids that feel like they have to leave to confront the evil in them that are making making their parents uncomfortable. That story always breaks my heart. But also, no, girl, you're in danger. Don't do it. When it
Yeah,
comes on
I
this
know.
letter, it shows her innocence very, very clearly.
I think it does show her innocence, and I think it mirrors a lot of other stories. When I read that, I think of oh, I think of Miss Mar I think of Miss Marvel's connection to Captain Marvel and the way she idolized this person that had flaws that she didn't recognize. And I think part of, you know, that letter speaks to Sapna idolizing magic so much and thinking that she had to leave because she was evil. And she joins this sort of list of girls from other countries whose manifestation is inherently tied to the idea of evil. So magic, and then you've got like Oya, who thought that she was a demon and cursed, and then you've got Sapna, who thought she was a demon and cursed. And she leaves, and it's heartbreaking. It feels so dangerous.
Yeah, Ilyana had no choice, but Sapna is making choices that she shouldn't have to be making. I think that's one of the key things as this little child, you know?
There's like a bit of an inversion there because you have Magic and Sapna, both of whom are trapped in who are in limbo and have too much knowledge, right? The curse of knowing too much, or and where Magic was confined to limbo, Sapna has the opposite challenge. Sapna is free to go wherever she wants. So Magic had to stay and was confined in limbo, and her whole job was to escape. And so Sapna becomes sort of the thematic opposite of that, which is, what if you could run away? Would that actually be any better? What if you could escape anywhere that you wanted to? And so I think it was an interesting like flip of the story. Instead of the girl trapped, the girl who is so free that she runs away from safety and protection and guidance. In issue 12, Magic is yanked through time into an alternate dimension where some weird, withered old ladies explain that their mother is Sapna, and Sapna ended all life and created the Kingdom of Death. So the world is devastated, and they need magic to kill Sapna. Classic little bit of matricide. They explain, centuries ago, Sapna fell from your side, and without your guidance, she became a force of great evil. She lay waste to all of mutant kind and all of mankind. But we, the good ones, refused to grow up in her shadow. We have dedicated our lives to fighting her reign. Your passage through time was documented in the great chronicles of the magical resistance. We knew that if we could contact you, warn you, maybe her rise to power could be aborted before it was ever started. And then they tell Magic that she has to go back in time and kill Sapna when she was a kid.
So this is another Ilyana story amplified, right? Ilyana has this darkness within her. She's had to like fight to find the innocence, but here's this kid that jumped in and didn't know what she was facing. And now we have a literal evil version of her who is an adult who is devastating a world. And there's like freedom fighters like trying to survive. That's rough. But another thing with magic is time travel. If you go back and read that brilliant original Magic Limited series, it's like she's living in limbo both as a child and as an old lady at the same time, right? Like there's these versions of her interacting in very odd ways. So Sapna, again, Jeff has done a brilliant job of capturing these different complexities in Ilyana's character, reflected in Sapna.
When I scanned back over the comics in preparation for this, I realized how deeply Sapna's story is actually just about magic. It's meant to echo magic. It's meant to call back on magic situation. It's meant to show different failures or strengths in magic as a mentor, as an X-Man, as a hero, as a teacher, as a sister. I would really love it if Sapna got a story for her. You know? And so as these things develop, we see a future of her that is warped. And again, I think that happens to a lot of characters, like this twisted future, or like the threat of their potential.
Become a very clear storytelling device. Here's the
Yeah.
future we have to avoid, right?
Yeah. And who got, because I mean, off the top of my head, I can think, I mean, the Civil War II thing with Miles, who they said that in the future he'd kill Captain America. Prodigy got it. Remember when they were like, if you ever un they gave Prodigy that vision of his future if he ever took the barriers off his power, and he was like a megalomaniac and he was bombing countries and
Yeah,
stuff.
I mean, there's probably 10,000 examples, you know,
Yeah.
of course. Like, if we kill Robert Kelly in the past, then it changes to Days of Future Past and in the future, right? Like, it's that absurd.
Exactly.
Power corrupts, and if you don't have the opportunity, and that's where the mutant and queer allegories never line up, is these kids do have superpowers, like, in their DNA. day. And if they are not properly trained or allowed to grow or develop, then inevitably they will turn evil because power corrupts. And that's always. But in Limbo specifically, Limbo's connected to kind of the Elder Gods and these like realms of the Ungerai and like all these other places. So these timey-wimey crazy things that exist concurrently, we now have like innocent Sapna, but also evil Sapna. So this expands in issue 13. Magic and Storm are trailing Sapna with a spell, and they find boogers. Before they pass through another of Sapna's portals, there's a bunch of realms that seem ancient and devastated, and they meet a bunch of mystic warriors. These are characters that have never been seen before or since. We have Antenna, two names, like bad drag name, right? A-N-N-E space T-E-N-N-A. Wow. There's Jack Craw, there's Spectra and Enoch, who's like a goat man. He might be my favorite. And they're all ranting about a world eater with like a magical lattice. And in 14, these are subplots. There's a lot going on in the books. In 14, Storm and Magic find another realm full of like monstrous skeletons. And here's where they finally find Sapna, who the little girl still, and she initially hugs Magic, but then attacks her and Storm, and she steals the Soul Sword and abandons them in the portal. So remember that little girl earlier that was like, "Do you control all the realms? Like, how do you control Limbo?" She was taking notes, right? Like she was figuring it out. So 15, we learn from the mystics that this entity called, by the way, Siakla, C-I-A-K-L-A, Siakla the Hunger. Some others call her the Feed Demon, the King of Souls. Has consumed all life in this world and is passing through to the next world on a host that it's soon used up. So it's very Proteus. Like this entity that has taken root in Sapna is like using her up. It's like desiccating her and is using her innocence to pass through to the next realm, which is literally the Belasco story. Belasco's trying to drain all of Ileana's innocence so that he can become like one of their commune with the elder gods of the Ungerai, right? So the mystics are like based in a devastated land called Maihava, Maihava, and they have each survived one of these like broken realms. Sapna soon leads a horde of demons to attack Exhaven directly, and she has the Soul Sword. And it's finally in issue 16 where the fight intensifies as Magic is trying to stop the threat but also save Sapna's soul.
Okay, so Magic gets her soul sword back, and in the 16, the fight intensifies. So Magic tries to reach out to Sapna's soul while the enemy, Siakla the Hunger, is possessing Sapna and nearly destroying Exhaven. Magic ends up killing the entity with the soul sword, but it results in Sapna's death as well. So, and then Magic is sitting there cradling Sapna's body at the end and declaring that Exhaven had failed. Then Magic realizes that she could hear Sapna's bay. Like soul and Sapna's voice from within the sword.
So Sapna's soul gets stuck in the sword itself. So this
Yeah.
is Exhaven. The word haven implies safety. The world there wasn't safe, so we made another world here. This is yet another example of the mutant homeland getting overrun, failing because of all of the threats that exist. They weren't able to save this child. Heartbreaking. It really is a very sad story for both Sapna, of course, but also Magic.
It is. What do you think of the white savior aspects of it?
Tell me your thoughts.
Magic swoops in, saves her from a hard situation, brings her to a place that almost isn't much better, which ultimately leads to her being connected to a huge amount of overwhelming magical information. Sapna is corrupted in a very similar way to magic, and where magic was saved and redeemed, Sapna, magic is ported around in different places to have loads of different people going, "You should kill her, actually. I know that you try to save everybody else, but this one is too far, too bad, too corrupted. She should die." And then,
As a girl of
because it
color, that's interesting. I'm really pleased as we look at it through that lens. I'm really pleased that Storm is there to kind of balance it out.
Is she? Because a lot,
Maybe.
so
Yeah, I
they,
guess not, huh?
it's brown faces telling you to kill the brown girl. So
Yeah,
you go forward,
written
and
by
then
white writers. Yeah.
it's Sapna's daughters saying, "No, kill her." And then you can't kill her on her own, so you take Storm, so Storm can go, "Yes, she's evil." And then ultimately, doesn't it echo to you the Miss Marvel death that was
Yeah,
meant
it does
to?
actually. And when I read this, I very much read it as the death of a child, but I didn't think of it as the death of a brown child,
It is.
which of course it is. That's sad. That's sad. That's
It is.
unfortunate.
And the story isn't really about Sapna. It's about Magic and how sad she is and how much she wants to save and help and couldn't and tried. And Sapna in this suffers and suffers and suffers and tries and tries and adores her, heaps praises on her. In the middle goes, "You're so pretty and amazing and wonderful and perfect, and I'm just not good enough," and runs off.
We very easily could have changed the ending of this, where it's still the epic story, but the child survives and it changes the entire tone.
Sapna could have had more of an agency in this story because Sapna wasn't helpless. And I think there's a point here where Sapna goes from incredibly powerful to incredibly helpless. Sapna isn't just possessed by this entity. She also knows all of the magic in Limbo. And if magic had enough wiles and ingenuity to escape Belasco, Sapna even had more. Sapna had wiles, ingenuity, all the skills, all the knowledge, and the X-Men to help her, and still had to be killed. And so that's.
It's almost as though Sapna's last act was to run away, right? This like voices in her mind telling her what to do. It's the Goblin Prince or whatever his name is, Goblin King in Labyrinth, luring the child away to eat its soul. It's the evil witch preying on the innocent kid. But when it's a kid of color, that does change the story for sure.
It does. And I mean, no one in comics ever really dies. And so these permanent deaths, these long-term deaths, actually start to stand out more than others. Because if you die and you don't come back. And so I thought Krakoa was going to be an amazing chance for us to bring Sapna back because everybody was being brought back. That wasn't
But we do
quite
get,
the end of the story. She doesn't quite die like that.
yeah, we do get a little bit of resolution. So because her soul is living in the sword, we jump to issue 19, which is the middle of Inhumans versus X-Men, the IVX event that fans kind of universally really struggle with. Although there are some decent stories in this run. I know it's not favorite for people. Magic's fighting the Inhumans with her team, and Sapna pulls Magic's mind inside the Soul Sword, and there's this kind of world of darkness where she's living lonely. Sapna tries holding Magic there against her will, even thinking maybe if Magic dies, then she can stay with me and I won't be alone forever. But she reluctantly lets Magic go to face the evil threat of Crystal, the messy Inhuman, which is, I love Crystal. She's a mess, but I love her. And then Sapna pulls Magic back inside, and in this event, Magic is able to pull Sapna's soul back into the real world. But again, she doesn't get her body back. She just becomes a ghost that fades away.
And she's a ghost that only magic can see. And I think this sort of body horror, this sort of thing, is exactly the premise of films like Get Out.
Absolutely.
Losing your body, losing your physical autonomy. I think if you read this story very focused on magic and a white perspective, this is like magic trying and failing. If you read this from a brown perspective, this is a poor girl snatched from a dangerous situation who suffers, is plagued, doesn't think she's worth it, and then her body is taken and she ends up being owned and like ownership. The way that magic has confused saving with owning. The fact that you end up with Sapna's soul in your sword, carrying her around like a Tamagotchi, and then you like resurrect her as a ghost that only you can see. And the fact that like that loneliness that Sapna felt in the sword, you know, when she pulls magic in and she's like, "If you die, you can stay here with me." And I think like the crux of the story is like, no, Sapna, this is ridiculous and immoral. It's a 10-year-old child who lost everything and is now being thrown into another dark dimension with no powers and no community. And of course she'd be lonely. I mean, she died. And now she's in the sword. So why would it be crazy to think that you would die and come and be with me? You know, when you said that nothing would ever happen to me and you'd protect me forever. And now I live alone in the dark dimension of your sword as a 10-year-old. So it's a really, really tragic, tragic story. And I think way more for Sapna than magic. Because for magic, this is like, I failed at, because she says, you know, X-Haven is a failure. I get why that is a good like coming of age transition story for an X-Man. And usually they do have that. The teachers have like a failed teacher moment. But usually then that spurs them on into bigger, higher things, you know?
If this story had ended with the child surviving, it would be very different. However, we
Yes.
often don't see, we talk, we open today by talking about how I don't know what direction Lemire planned, or it's rare for us to be able to see a character story front to back. I do like that we get an ending, even though it's not an ending we desire. And Sapna becomes one of those hundreds of Marvel characters, or even X-Men characters, who has so much potential, and could literally be living out there as a resurrected person. Maybe she's in the white hot room with all the Krakoa kids. Maybe she's out there and there's a writer that will bring her back. I always really love to explore the potential of a character when we're having these conversations. And this is a character with unlimited, untapped potential, not only in Limbo, but as an agent unto herself, as her power. You brought up Prodigy or David Elaine before. Her power could take her to that level of power where she has the ability to adapt to language. And look at what's being done with Doug Ramsay as kind of revelation in the modern comics now, like untapped potential at an even higher degree. Even without the magic, this character has a tremendous amount of power, and she never got to figure out who she was. This is tragic at like a Morlock massacre kind of level. Like this is like innocence being slaughtered, and that's sad. That's a sad thing.
It
Fuck that evil demon lady.
very true. I mean, yeah, but this is, I think this is part and parcel for the X-Men. I mean, Jean had Phoenix, Magic has Darkchild. Everybody and their fucking cousin has like a horrible possessing cosmic force that has made them do some evil things. So I think Sapna can come back. When I raised Strange Academy earlier, that's where I would put Sapna. Like in a Strange Academy place. Because they're doing all fucking sorts. They're through every door, every portal, every trap door that you can fall through. Those kids are doing it. And I think like stumbling on Sapna in some way would put her exactly where she's meant to be.
Yeah, she's a fantastic character, and I agree. I think that there is a certain spot for her. You know, one of the recent shows I did, character shows I did, was on Artie Maddox,
Yeah,
the little
I
pink
listen.
emoji kid, and
Yeah.
we talked about like he's kind of been like between the ages of 7 and 10 for like 30 years now, and like there's particular versions of this kind of next generation of characters that have so much potential to be kind of amplified up at like a newer New Mutants level, and this is where I think readers sometimes get pretty frustrated. We have a whole new generation of new students introduced, but there's these hundreds of characters that, if given the right love, could thrive. I was fond of this character when I did my research, but this conversation has like really solidified her as like a tremendous amount of potential. We also don't have a lot of mutants from India. There's Trinary and there's Indra,
Yeah.
just not a lot. And Sapna has like, that's one of the largest populations on the planet. There's a lot of potential for her. I'm so glad we talked today, Ash. I like this character a lot, and it's lovely to get to know you. Do you have any kind of concluding thoughts on Sapna? Thank you for your skilled and rich research capability. I love the way that you portrayed her through your lens. That it taught me a lot as well. So thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to come on and speak. Closing thoughts. I think there's a lot of sacrificial lambs in X-Men. I think X-Men has always been a little bit of a sacrificial lamb property. And I think Sapna is one of those, one of a long list of sacrificial lambs. And I would love for her to come back and be able to own a story that is hers, outside of the many layers of suffering that she actually sat under. Because,
Yeah.
Got like extermination, you've got the Cherrigen Mist, you've got living in limbo, you've got demons around, you got possessed by a demon, you got your powers manifest, you got your parents kicked you out. Like there was a lot of shit that she came into, and she still managed to really, really shine in this
She
story.
deserves more than trauma, and also she's more than just like a horror character, because ultimately that's what her story is. She's the little girl that got corrupted and then died at the end of the movie.
Exactly. And even if she came back, even if she came back a horror character, because magic is kind of that, magic is kind of that. And so I think there's loads of ways she can come back. I mean, the thing that I would love, because Doctor Strange sort of hints in it, is that she can learn other languages. And I would love Sapna as this character who shifts fundamentally based on what she's learned, because now we know her as this sort of magical. This magical prodigy character, but that's because that's the language she knows. And the idea that she could come back, learn a different language, and be in a completely different context, and be like an alien star politician because she understands everybody's language, and she's like flitting between like the Shi'ar and the Kree and the Skrull. Like, there's just so many ways that understanding
Yeah, you
everybody's
know,
language could make you different.
there's a lot of main character for potential for her, but also, even if we never got that, if I was writing magic right now, and I don't know that Ashley Allen will hear this anytime soon, we could simply have one page where Magic takes a break from the X-Men and stops in New Delhi and has lunch with Sapna one day, and Sapna's thriving and she's in school and she gives Magic a big hug and says, "I'm so glad to see you. I'm so happy here after Krakoa." And then, like, even if that's all we got, that's beautiful, you know, like sometimes that's all we get. But the unresolved potential is, I think, the biggest tragedy here.
It is, and unfortunately, that's quite. That's really, really quite common with black and brown characters because 9 times out of 10, we're put into stories, or black and brown characters are put into stories to show a level of diversity, or to show a superficial level of like, yeah, look, this is worldly, but actually, do they get the focus? Do they ever end up being leading any of these stories? We keep resurrecting the same 25 people so they can lead the stories forever. And so you get this churn of like the real diversity sits in all the death and all the missed potential. And so I'd love for some of these stories, and I think Satna for me would be like one of my top five. It's like if you had to pick a character out of obscurity and put them somewhere, I think that would be amazing. Because I honestly, and I'm sorry to throw him under the bus, but I never want to read about Quentin Quire again. I just don't. I just don't. And I don't think he's done anything truly, truly interesting for decades. Okay?
Ash, what a tremendous joy to connect with you. I'm so glad to have befriended you. You're easy on the eyes, you're easy on the ears, and you're super fucking smart. So this was delicious. It was really lovely to spend the afternoon with you.
Thank you. I'm on X of Words, so you can find me at X of Words on pretty much every platform. And yeah, come listen, come talk with us. Come talk with us
Yeah.
over there.
I'd love to have you back to my house sometime. Feel free to invite me to yours too. I'd love to come hang out over there. Over on the main show, we are going to continue conversations for Halloween month, all about different kind of Halloween themes. We're going into the world of Sabretooth a little bit. So watch for an episode on Ruins of Ravencroft, Sabretooth number one. My featured guest on that episode is Tony Fleeks. And then we're finishing the month out with the trials of the Son of Satan and his sister Satana, which will be a delicious time as well. So, thanks everybody for listening. Thank you so much to Asher Lane for joining me today. We'll see you all
Thank you,
back
thank you.
here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon. And now, stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. In the summer of 1940, after the rapid defeat of France, senior Nazi officials revived an idea that had circulated in European anti-Semitic circles for decades, forcibly removing Europe's Jews to the island of Madagascar. The proposal became known as the Madagascar Plan, and it gained momentum within Germany's foreign office under officials such as Franz Rademacher, who drafted memoranda outlining the scheme. At the time, Madagascar was a French colony, and Nazi planners assumed that if Britain were defeated or made peaceful, control of French overseas territories could be transferred to Germany. The idea was presented as a territorial solution to what the regime called the Jewish question. Under the plan, millions of Jews from across Europe would be deported by ship to Madagascar, where they would live under German police supervision in what amounted to a massive island ghetto. Nazi documents envisioned confiscating Jewish property to finance the deportations and placing the SS in administrative control. Adolf Eichmann, a name you might recognize, and others within the SS examined logistical possibilities, though even on paper, the transportation demands were staggering. The plan assumed German naval dominance and the ability to move vast populations across wartime seas, conditions that never quite materialized. While sometimes later described as an alternative to genocide, which is a rough thing to think about, the Madagascar plan was never humanitarian. Internal discussions made clear that deportees would be subjected to harsh conditions and indirect methods of destruction. Some proposals anticipated that disease, starvation, and isolation would significantly reduce the population over time. The island was imagined less as a refuge than as a containment zone where Jews would be removed from Europe permanently. By late 1940 and early 1941, the plan became impractical. Britain remained in the war, Germany lacked naval control, and attention shifted eastward with the invasion of the Soviet Union. As mass shootings of Jews escalated and occupied Eastern Europe and policy radicalized, the regime moved toward systemic extermination. Historians view the Madagascar plan as part of the transitional phase in Nazi policy, evidence that forced removal and territorial expulsion were seriously considered before the machinery of industrialized murder was fully implemented. Now we're going to jump back into the world of Uncanny Avengers number 4. This is the Rick Remender post-Avengers versus X-Men series, when the Red Skull has gotten the brain of Charles Xavier grafted to his own and is now running his own group of S-Men. So in this issue, the Red Skull walks through the streets giving orders to put people to death. He's making the heroes fight each other. another. He hangs the Nazi eagle, blankets the streets in swastikas, and surrounds himself with armed men and tanks. Welcome to the Reich Eternal, Herr Rogers. Rejoice, broken spirits. I bring you a better world, a global Reich built on art and intellectual pursuit, orderly, safe, and clean. I know your pain. You reel from the sad state of your nation, as did I once upon a time. You cannot ignore the truth. Your melting pot has failed. How it pains you to watch this capitalism, this greed, rot your homeland from within. You often ask yourself why you continue to dance for these entitled wretches who have strayed so far from what you embody. Captain America replies, shut up! I love my country! I believe in America! But the Red Skull just puts him to sleep, just a little switch in his brain. The best way to sell a lie is to believe it yourself. When the people see you hunting mutants in the streets, they will rally behind their noble hero. We will direct their rage and frustration at this minority, giving a face to their pain, a face they can crush. We will elevate the common man to nobility by simply denying the mutants' rights reserved for humans, voting, shared public utilities, marriage. Then after we've grown our army frothing, oh, I hate the word frothing, frothing and impassioned, we will wipe the mutants out. We will win the war for America, for humanity, and in return they will beg us to rule them. Seeing your nation with fresh eyes, my dear Captain America, I assure you, you've lost your war. It just happened so slowly, you grew accustomed to it. But if you look to your heart, you will realize the truth. You're no longer fighting to preserve this rancid nation. You're fighting to change it back, to add some semblance of sanity to an incurably sick culture that breeds only parasites, greedy polluters, and psychotic madmen. A hopeless struggle, you continue out of habit. You imagine that if you fight hard enough, one day you will wrest control from the bankers who own you and return this nation to its former glory. Clean streets, honest neighbors, attractive wives, green lawns. But in reality, this is and will remain your America. An uneducated population fixed on competition, material wealth, and voyeurism. Violent monsters doused in antibiotics to offset their diet of sugary sweet drink and mounds of carcinogenic cow flesh. And gosh, what a read of our country. It's crazy. This is what you fight for. Together we would clean this nation, transform it to one more befitting both of our high ideals. Are you simply too arrogant to see when you are wrong? Look at your future. Are these ignorant rednecks the goal of your American dream? So Rogue and Havoc start wailing on the Red Skull, and Havoc yells, you're like the closeted jock who beats on gay kids. You don't hate mutants. You're terrified because you want to be just like us. Ooh. And the Red Skull disappears. He just lets the heroes pick up the pieces, saving his vision of the Red Onslaught in the few, which is going to come a few months in the future here. We get the Red Skull-faced Sentinels also in an image that evokes the Days of Future Past, this time with Alex and Wanda in front of the poster. To be continued. Let me welcome my very favorite friend, Alex Segura, to the show with me. Alex, sorry for the word frothing in advance. How are you, my friend? Are you a Red Skull fan, Alex?
Happy to be here. Always nice to be invited and good to see you. Look, I was always an X-Men kid. X-Men, Spider-Man. I think I've mentioned this to you. When I did read the Avengers, it was usually West Coast Avengers because that's what was on the rack. I have a lot of the Bob Harris, Steve Epting Avenger stuff and some Mark Gruenwald cap. That was like my cap and Avengers stuff. So no, in short, I was never a big like Red Skull person, but wow, I got a big dose of it in this issue.
Tell me some of your thoughts on this issue of Uncanny Avengers. This is the Remender run where it's combining the Avengers and X-Men after Cyclops has just killed Xavier with the Phoenix Force, if you remember that in continuity.
I don't have a lot of knowledge of I know the broad strokes. I know like what you just said, but I wasn't an active reader of this run, but I like the novelty of it. As having read the issue, I really like the idea of like Havoc and Wanda back when she was considered a mutant interacting with the Avengers, or Havoc interacting with Wanda, or Rogue and Wolverine being on the team. It makes sense plot-wise in the wake of Avengers versus X-Men, i.e. like let's get together and prove that the dream was working or can work. So I like that conceit. I don't know how long it can last, but again, I haven't read the whole run, but this issue in particular had interesting team-ups. I like the Havoc-Wanda stuff. I like the Rogue and Wanda stuff. That scene at the end was really well done, and I thought Remender captured Rogue's personality really well. I feel like Havoc doesn't really work for me in this issue. issue, and I know there's stuff coming up that won't work for me, but I think that the art's beautiful. Like John Cassaday, what a loss. What, you know, so every time I look at his art now, I just feel that kind of sadness that we lost him so young, because really what a great superhero artist he was. Yeah, overall it was really it was an entertaining issue. It definitely kept my attention, but really the skull stuff was just so heavy and so intense and just so tough to read through, but I think that's the point, right?
Yeah, this is technically a clone of the Red Skull, who now has the Xavier brain in it, right? Like, this is a wild section of continuity, and this is what becomes the Red Onslaught in the big Axis event. If for listeners, we'll get there in these conversations in a few weeks. John Cassaday's art, beautiful. Now, you're coming off of a really wonderful run on Star Wars with Phil Noto, just such a beautiful job. I'm wondering, as you look at like the Empire in Star Wars and the comparison between that and these like kind of anti-mutant kind of fascist regimes, this is a theme in our comics where we have the oppressive, awful people as the ones that we're supposed to punch, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Empire is very fascistic, to say the least. And I think what I found interesting about this issue was the blending of the Days of Future Past iconography and methodology. You know, you have the Sentinels and that one big splash page that was beautifully drawn with Havoc and Wanda in the Wolverine and Kate Pryde roles with the Red Skull's vile, racist, fascist perspective. I found that a little on the nose, but also really interesting to explore, because it makes sense. It makes sense that the Red Skull would weaponize these racist tools for his own means. And so that was an interesting thing to explore. The challenge with villains like these is that they could very easily become scene-chewing monsters and just so, so bad that there's no redemption. And I'm always more interested in villains that don't think they're villains. Like, and obviously the Red Skull thinks he's right, but his means and methodology are very clearly villainous. Whereas someone like Magneto, he doesn't think he's the villain. He thinks he's fighting for a great cause. He's just willing to go to different ends to achieve his goals, and can see where he and Xavier overlap in the more Claremont version of both.
I give some room in this in my review for the Red Skull speeches. The amount of energy he's putting into spinning why this is so good for the population to turn against these people and have them kill each other, just wildly uncomfortable to read in our comics. But that's Days of Future Past. It's Orcus. It's, you know, Operation Zero Tolerance. Like, these themes in our X-Men comics are so very consistent, and the X-Men are like, here we go again. Captain America, of course, experiences that from a very different perspective. And then we've got the Scarlet Witch, who did the No More Mutants spell and kind of achieved those goals in a very different way. So some really wildly different perspectives. And I do think Remender does a good job at capturing those from the lens of the telepathic Red Skull, who has formed his own group of kind of S-Men in this era, who are like very marauders. It's the very terrible supervillains, again, that we just want to see smashed, you know?
It's very intense. And I think, you know, I've been in that situation too, where you're writing a very vile person espousing their views. And it's like, it really hurts you because you obviously don't share these views, but you have to put them on the page kind of to relay what the POV of this character is. So I think the challenge creatively, whenever doing that or depicting violence or depicting, you know, anything like that, it's, you don't want to veer into the gratuitous where it feels like you're just doing it because you enjoy doing it. You know what I mean? You're doing it to relay a character trait or a perspective or to further the plot. I think Remender does a good job of balancing that. I think sometimes the Red Skull's rant goes a little too long and you're like, okay, is what's happening here? But I think it's really in contrast to Cap, to Wanda, and the heroes. And so it works. It works as an issue. But man, the Red Skull sure likes to talk.
My Red Skull voice is very Hans and Franz. Like, it's been Hans. Now, I opened with a forgotten piece of history a little bit, the idea of the Madagascar plan, these kind of early Nazi ideas of let's just round up all the Jews and send them to an African nation where they'll be isolated and under our control. We hear these wild theories, and I'll kind of draw the comparison to modern America, where you hear things like, ooh, let's label trans people as a terrorist group, or let's just gather up the immigrants and toss them in one of those quote unquote shithole countries and, you know, like just let them rot, or put them in camps, which is of course happening all around us. The wild things. I don't know if you had any thoughts on the Madagascar plan or even kind of its modern comparisons. It's rough when we see these types of ideas given any sort of national platform at any point in history.
It's hard to listen to it. I mean, I like to think I'm a bit of a history buff, but I hadn't gotten into the details of the Madagascar plan in my experience. So it was really jarring to hear you share that. And I think it's doubly haunting to have it feel relevant to the things we're struggling with today, like the trans community, you know, undocumented and even citizens being kidnapped and taken away and hidden away and removed from their rights and their freedoms. Anytime people in power impose things on marginalized groups, that is problematic to say the least. It's hateful and it's bad, and it's just sad that as a world we haven't evolved past that. And something like World War II, which is still relatively fresh in our memory, I wish it seemed more distant, you know.
It's interesting, and we'll have more of these conversations on my show in some future, chats. But Madagascar is kind of a template for the Genosha allegory in the comics, but it's also apartheid in South Africa, mixed into that. But the Red Skull's about to establish concentration camps on Genosha, which has gone through some crazy shit, from the Cassandra Nova extermination plotline to some of the more recent stuff that's happened there, including raising all the dead as zombies. Genosha's been through it in the comics a little bit. So my last question for you today, my friend, how you doing in 2026? You and I are friends. We've established a good friendship through the show. We've hung out. We've written some things together. It's a delight. We're both parents. I know we have a ton of similar things in our history and even in our lives that are very in common. I see you as a very kindred spirit. How you holding up these days?
I'm okay. I mean, look, I hate to always shrug off and be like, in spite of the world is challenging. We're dealing with so much. I find great hope and help coming when, just doing stuff like mutual aid, helping locally, helping your neighbors, being active in your community. Those are the things that make me feel productive. Sometimes there's very little you can do about things on a much larger scale aside from being informed and speaking out. And I think that's part of a responsibility we have. But I'm okay. I'm trying to stay productive. I'm trying to enjoy my time with my family and my friends as much as I can, and try to enact change in the ways we can, and push back against the not so slow creep of like fascism in many ways in our lives.
Yeah, we've talked about values. We've talked about our dads. I'm so inspired by your wife and by your writing and by the community that you've built. I'm glad you're in my life, my friend. Thanks for being a stellar human.
You too, man.
All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. Please, living joyfully is an act of defiance in this crazy world. We will see you back here next week for our next Red Skull chat. Bye, Alex.